Okay, we're on the top of Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, and we're talking about Odisa, which means that the Shtar testifies to the fact that the Lova was Moda in our presence, that he owes this money to the Malva, and the Lova commissions the Edom to write the Shtar in one of two scenarios. Either he explicitly tells the Edom, instructs them to write the Shtar, or B, Kanu Miyod. However, we had a long discussion about the case where there were three people in front of whom he made the Hodah. And the Gemara thinks that if there were three people present, especially if he took the initiative to invite these three, he meaning the Lova, took the initiative and he was machanis them, then it means he accepted them as Dayanim. Now once he accepts them as Dayanim, then the Beis Din has an authority to write up a Shtar Odisa without even getting the permission of the Lova. And why is that so? Because Beis Din has power which is called Hefker Beis Din Hefker. So if they want to make this Shtar, they want to make this Halva Balpeh, Milv Balpeh into a Milv Shtar, they have the rights to do so. So they instruct the scribe, he's called the Safri the Daini, to write up the Shtar. Now the Shtar is written in first person of the Beis Din, as if the Beis Din were writing the Shtar. And there are certain formal, shall we say, procedural requirements when you write up a Shtar in Beis Din. When Beis Din is writing up a Shtar, then it should be written in a very specific way. For example, one of the requirements in a Shtar of Beis Din is to say B'moshav Beis Dina. In other words, it was done with the yeshiva of Beis Din. Or, for example, it should be written as B'moshav Tlos. You'll see this on the top of Daf Lamed Amud Beis. V'chol Lishnei. Do you see this? V'chol Lishnei de Beis Dina. The Shtar, since it's written by the Beis Din, again, we're assuming now that the three people in whose presence he made the Hodah now serve as a Beis Din, and they write up there for a Shtar Beis Din, they don't even need his permission for that, then the Nusach HaShtar, the text of the Shtar, the formula of the Shtar, should reflect the fact that they're functioning as a Beis Din. It's not like a case of a shtar that's written by two edim, which is called zichron edus. Here there has to be an additional sentence, and what the Gemara is now addressing is a case where that sentence was omitted from the shtar. Right, v'lo avi kosev beis. So the case was where this shtar came in front of Beis Din, and the shtar did not have that magical formula, quote, b'mosav tlosa havina. V'chad leisohi. We were three people, and one of them is no longer here. Now, this is a Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis says that what happens if between time T1 and time T2, one of the Dayanim dies? Time T1 is the moment in which the Beis Din came to a final decision. They handed down their ruling. Time T2 is when they sat down and wrote the Shtar of Beis Din, which is B'mosav Tlosa. Those are the two key words, but most of Tlos. So we were a yeshiva of three Dayanim. But guess what? Before they got a chance to write this shtar, but most of Tlos, one of the Dayanim was as gestorben. So now what do we do? We write the following. But most of Tlos, Havina, in other words, we made this decision with three Dayanim, but Chad Lesohi, but one of them is no longer here, meaning that he died. So that's the Nusach. Now, In a strange sense, what we have here is only two signatures on a shtar of Beis Din. So we're in a kind of a quandary here, because we know that a Beis Din has to be made up of three Dayanim, and yet there are only two Dayanim signed on the shtar. So we might think this is not a shtar of Beis Din. Beis Din is not two Dayanim, and therefore they're signing as Eidim perhaps, but it would not have the Gishpa, it would not have the Tokef of a Shtar of Beis Din, which has a tremendous authority to it. So the solution to that quandary is that Beis Din will add the words V'chad Leisohi. You know, Havina means we were three, but now one is gone. And then, once we're Mekayim the Shtar with regard to the two signatures, then we already have in the Shtar itself a clear-cut statement that they were functioning as a Beis Din. However, in a case of an Odisa, it's a little bit strange because, generally speaking, when you talk about a Shtar Odisa, it's only two witnesses. And in fact, here we only have two witnesses signed on the Shtar. Now, it could be that they were three and one of them died, but we don't find that in the Shtar. In other words, the Shtar should have in some way indicated that Chad Lesohi. And unfortunately, one of the Dayanim was passed on. And instead of the other two writing specifically that we were three and one is gone, they left that out. And now we're left with this shtar. Now, you know, if the shtar is only Avis of two Edim and it's not the testimony of a Beis Din, then we're in trouble because we did not get express permission from the Mishkai, from the Lova, to write up the shtar. So the two Edim did not have the right to create the shtar, and if the shtar would be completely invalid. If, on the other hand, they were functioning as a Beis Din, just one of them died, and there are only two signatures on the shtar because one of them died, then we have a shtar of Beis Din. But the only problem is, unfortunately, they omitted those magical words, "Bimosav tlos avina v'chad lesohi." So what do we do with such a shtar? So Sovar Avina Lemeima, Ravina thought that he could activate the principle of Reish Lakish. Yesterday, if you recall, we had a whole discussion about Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that when you have Edom on a shtar, signed on a shtar, then they'll testify on the kashrus of the shtar in any situation, any question that you'll come up with. So in this case, the chazaka would be that these two signatures, right, indicate that they were dayanim, and they certainly had a third dayan, even though the third dayan is not signed in the shtar, apparently he passed on, and even though the shtar doesn't testify, they left out the words v'chad l'shoi. Nevertheless, we're going to apply Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that whatever question you have in the shtar itself is—it's what we called it yesterday, tudat hechsher. If you remember, it always testifies on the kashrus of the shtar. So, for example, if you don't know whether the loaf actually handed the shtar to the malva, maybe the malva found the shtar, or he stole the shtar, then the shtar is made that it was given over kedasu kedin from the lova to the malva. If you have any questions about a get, whether it was written lishma, then the get itself testifies that the get was written lishma. If you have any other question, maybe the seller or the buyer was a katan, or maybe the edim were katanim, the shtar, once it's verified that these are authentic signatures, there's no forgery, it's made, and it's machshir itself. So here, what we're missing in the text of the shtar, the words v'chad lishoi, one of them passed on, and we want to know if this shtar has the status of a shtar of Beis Din, as if all three dayanim were there when the hodah, when the loveh admitted that he owes money to the malveh. So Ravina thought that let's use Reish Lakish. Now keep in mind that the Gemara already established, as we discussed yesterday, one exception, one possible exception to Reish Lakish. And that is that in the case of a shtar odisa, the shtar itself should indicate one of two things: either that the lova told us to write the shtar, or alternatively that we were kana miyado. And what happens if this was omitted from the shtar? And if you remember Rav Papa from yesterday, Rav Papa said yesterday, right, Yesh Liachar Zman, right? So Rav Papa said that maybe we shouldn't apply Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is only applicable when there are normal issues that could come up, and we're sure that the Edim clarified all those issues and they made sure that everything was smooth. But we don't know if the Edim realized that they don't have the right to create a Shtar Odisa without getting permission from the Lova to do so. And then the Gemara, if you remember, made a test case. You know, they asked the Safri to Dine, you know, did they know, and do people know? And then they came to the conclusion that the Edim must have known that they have to get permission from the Lova. Here also, we're not sure. Maybe these two individuals were of the misimpression. Maybe Maybe they thought that, you know what, we don't even need a third dayan. Maybe the two of us, you know, after all, there's a logic to say that you only need two dayanim. If both dayanim agree, you have already a guaranteed majority. So maybe they came to the conclusion that they don't need a third dayan. If they knew that they needed a third dayan, they should have indicated in the shtar that that third dayan was with us when we made the decision, right, Havina. But lesser, now he's not around, but they left that out. So we begin to wonder, maybe this is a shtar of a bezdin toim. Toim means that they made a big mistake over here. They thought that they could adjudicate as a bezdin with two dayanim. And this is the point of Rav Nosson Bar Ami. Omelei Rav Nosson Bar Ami. Rav Nosson Bar Ami says to Ravina, Hachi Amrinon, Mishmei the Rava. This is what I heard in the name of Rava. Kol ki haygavna chayshin lebezdin toim. That in this situation where they left out the formal testimony that every shtar of when the two dayanim left to sign the shtar, it has to have that form. That's the protocol of a shtar, and it should have said that chad was toim. They left it out. Maybe we should be choshesh that this bezdin is not really on the up and up. Maybe they thought that it's enough to have two dayanim, and they don't need three dayanim. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, he says the solution is the following. So again, we have, let's just summarize that we have Shnei Ksuv Mamachishim Zetze. On the one hand, we have Ravina. Ravina thinks that that the Edim are signed on the Shtar as a Bezdin, and if they're signed as a Shtar as a Bezdin, then even though they didn't write explicitly that the third Dayan was with us, but he's no longer, we have an assumption that the shtar, based on Reish Lakish, is machshir es atzmo. It kashes itself up by saying, yes, there was a third Dayan, but he died. On the other hand, just give me 1 minute, we have Rav Nosson Bar Ami. Rav Nosson Bar Ami says, you know what? Why did they leave out from the shtar, the protocol requires that they should have written that there was a third dayan over here, and they left that out. Maybe we should be suspicious of a bezdin toim. Maybe this bezdin was under the mistaken impression that they could issue a psak and write up a shtar based on two judges without a third judge. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and I'll be right with you, I just want to get this one paragraph. He says, you know what, I have a solution to this. I have a kosev hashlishi shiachriya b'neim, and that is the following. What did they write in the shtar, and what did they omit from the shtar? E kosev ba, if in this shtar Odisa, they wrote the following two words, beidina, meaning that this shtar was written by a bezdin, su lo tzarech. We can even tolerate the shtar and validate it with the omission of the words b'mosav tlosa and chad lesoi, that one of them died. Why? Because the very moment that you see in the shtar that they were very careful to write beidina, it means they understood that this was a bezdin. And if they understood that this was a bezdin, we should assume that since they added bezdin, they knew that a bezdin is made up of three. Go ahead, Don.
Yesterday we were learning about two witnesses who create a shtar and conditions for it. Today we're jumping to that.
Yeah, you missed the introduction. So in the introduction to today's shi, I'll just give it to you quickly. We're shifting now from the case where the hodah took place in front of two witnesses to a case where the hodah took place in front of three witnesses. And the Gemara has established earlier that if there are three witnesses and the lova gathered together these three witnesses, and the question is, why did he need to do so? Wouldn't it be enough for him to get two witnesses? The fact that he added the third witness indicates that he has appointed these three gentlemen as his bezdin. Once he accepts them as his bezdin, the bezdin has rights to write up the shtar even without the lova's permission. But they have to write up a shtar that indicates that they have three signatures, and those three are testifying that we accepted this hodah in front of us. You know, we all three of us heard this hodah from the lover that he owes the money to the malve. And the problem is, what happens if they're missing those magical words, b'mosav tlosa?
Okay.
So the Gemara says that on the one hand, it's a shtar. So if it's a shtar, maybe we should upgrade it to the level of the shtar that would make it kosher. And the only way we could upgrade this shtar to the level of kosher if we assume that they function as a bezin, that there were really three of them and not just two of them, even though there are only two signatures. Because again, if you don't add the third dayan, then you drop back to the situation of Edom, and the Edom don't have a right to create the shtar because they never got permission from the lover to do so. So now we need to assume, if this shtar is going to be meaningful and valid, that there was a third person here who's not signed on the shtar. He made up the bezdin, and Nebuch, he passed on. But the problem is, it's not written in the shtar. And the normal protocol in the shtar of a bezdin is that if there are only two signatures, they will add to the shtar that we were three, and the third died. And this shtar that we're looking at is a shtar odisa, and unfortunately, there's no indication here that there was a third dayan. So perhaps, says Rav Nosson, we should be worried about the fact that they fooled themselves into thinking that they could serve as a bezdin, even though they only were two. That it wasn't that they were three to begin with and one died, but they only had from the get-go two people who can only serve as witnesses. They can't be dayanim. They're only two, and we need three. And we also have to add to the equation the very logical possibility that they fooled themselves into thinking that two could serve as bezdin, because after all, once they had a unanimous decision of two, even if there would have been a third dayan and he would have been a dissenter, it wouldn't have made a dent, because you only need two out of three to make the final decision. So what do we do in this case? Rav Nachbar Yitzchok says we're going to have to require that at least, you know, it's the barest minimum. We're holding on with a very thin, you know, you imagine you're falling off a cliff, and we're holding on to the thinnest thing that could possibly climb up to the top of the mountain so we don't fall. And that is, it has to have the two words Beit Dina. If it doesn't say Beit Dina, we're in trouble, because then we think that maybe they confuse themselves and fool themselves into thinking that two make up a bezdin, and they could create this shtar even with two dayanim. However, if they added the two words beidina, then it's common knowledge that the phrase beidina refers to three dayanim. And therefore, once they added the words Beit Dina, even though they didn't mention, hey, you know what, we're missing a third signature here, but that's because Nebuch, he died, they didn't add that to the shtar, which they should have done had they followed standard procedure. Nevertheless, we can assume that since they said Beit Dina, that we are serving as a bezdin, and that's written in the shtar, then for sure they knew that they needed a third, and where is the third? He must have died. So we're going to make all these assumptions, but only, says Rav Nachbar Yitzchok, if the shtar includes the phrase Beit Dina. So now the Gemara is not happy with Rav Nachman. Why? V'dilma, perhaps, Beit Din Chatzufu D'Amar Shmuel. You may recall from the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin that Shmuel made a statement, Shnayim Shedonu, if two judges sat down in judgment and they issued a ruling, even though they shouldn't have done so, is Dineim Din, their judgment is valid. In other words, you could have a bezdin that's made up of two judges. They shouldn't have done so. El Nikro, we call them a bezdin chatzuf. You know, they are chutzpahdik because they violated the takanas chachamim that you must require a din in front of three judges. They only had two judges, but nevertheless, the din is okay, and it's a valid din. So now we have to worry about the fact that these two judges thought that we paskin like Shmuel. In fact, we don't paskin like Shmuel. There were rabbis back in the day that paskin, they accepted Shmuel, but lalacha, we don't accept Shmuel. And therefore, if they fool themselves and imagine that we accept Shmuel, and therefore they assumed that they could serve as a valid bezdin, and their din would be recognized by the Torah based on the principle of Shmuel, now we have a serious problem. Because even though they added the words bezdin into the shtar, maybe they meant the bezdin of Shmuel, meaning a bezdin that's comprised of how many judges? of two judges. We don't paskin like Shmuel. We paskin that a judgment of two judges is not a judgment of a Beis Din. And there's no status of a Beis Din in less than what?
Three
judges. And Mimela, we're now in a quandary again. Even though they wrote the words Beis Din, maybe they belong to that school of thought that accepted the dissenting opinion, the minority opinion of Shmuel, that a Beis Din of two could serve as a Beis Din. Although they're Chatzufim, they shouldn't have done that. The Takana, admittedly, is that there should be three Dayanim, but they didn't have a third Dayan, they were in a pinch, and they went ahead relying on Shmuel, and they created a Rodisa Shtar that was Kiilu created by a Beis Din, when really it's not a Beis Din at all. So that's what the Gemara's problem is. Dilma, Beis Din, Chatzufu. Maybe this was a Beis Din of Chatzufim. And even though they wrote Beis Din in the Shtar, maybe, perhaps, they fooled themselves, they were mistaken, and they accepted the sheet of Shmuel. So Gemara says, you're right. This is a basic question. We're going to have to amend the text, so to speak. We're going to have to say that Rav Nachman by Yitzchak is talking about a case where they added something beyond Beit Dina. What did they add to the Shtar? Let's look at the Shtar, read the fine print. The Kosav Beit they wrote in the Shtar. Beit Dina, the Ravna Ashi, the Rav Ashi. In other words, this was not a Shtar that was written up by the... the members of the court. You know, it was written under the supervision of Rav Ashi himself. You know, Rav Ashi is the head supervisor of the Beis Din, right? Every Beis Din has to have some sort of rabbi who oversees the Beis Din, makes sure that everything is done kedasu kedin. And they wrote that this was Rav Ashi's Beis Din. So it means that Rav Ashi told them, instructed them, that they could serve as a Beis Din. And now, Rav Ashi would not have done so unless they were three Dayanim. So once again, the fact that they wrote it was a Beis Din of Rav Ashi, and apparently it was quite common in those days, that you didn't just write up a shtar and say, well, we as a Beis Din, but you wrote a Beis Din of so-and-so. You know, that gave it a certain... A certain validity, you know, an extra chashivas if you wrote whose Beis Din it was. This was the Beis Din of Rav Ashi. It must be that there were three Dayanim. And now we could rely on Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, and we can assume that one of the three Dayanim Nebuch died, and they didn't add the words V'chad L'Sohi, but there certainly were three Dayanim. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, let's read the fine print again. What does it say? It doesn't say in the shtar that Ravina Ashi, Rav Ashi, gave them explicit permission to write up this shtar. What it says is it was overseen, right, the supervising board was the Beis Din of Ravina Ashi, of Rav Ashi. So the Gemara says that's not enough. Why? Dilma, perhaps, Rabbanan to Bei Rav Ashi. In other words, there were many different Herkevim, I don't know how you say that in English, you know, different groups of Dayanim, and they were all overseen by Rav Ashi. And what the Shtar is telling us, that it was done under one of the various subsidiary Batei Dinim within the entire structure of Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi's the head honcho, but the Dayanim were not, the Dayanim that instructed them to write the Shtar were not, it wasn't Rav Ashi himself. So it was the Dayanim who served in the Beis Din of Rav Ashi. Now what did these Dayanim hold about Shmuel? Remember Shmuel said that you could have a Beis Din made up of two and they could serve as a Beis Din, although they're Chatzufim, but the Din is valid. So Dilma, perhaps, Rabbanan de Bei Rav Ashi, what they meant by Beit Dina de Rav Ashi was the Rabbanan of Beit Dina Rav Ashi. You know, it's the rabbis that were part of this whole Herkev, I don't know how do you say that in English, this whole constellation of Batei Dinim under the rubric of Rav Ashi, but each Beis Din had its own flavor and its own opinion, and that particular Beis Din that instructed these two gentlemen to write up the Shtar, they were Shmuel Dika Beis Din, they were holding like Shmuel, and they held that you could have a Beis Din made up of two. So once again, the Gemara is going to have to redefine print and expand the text. And the Gemara answers, the Chsiv Bey, what does it say in the Shtar? It doesn't just say Beidina de Bey Rav Ashi, but it says Beidina de Bey Rav Ashi vi Amalon Rav Ashi, which means Rav Ashi instructed us to write the Shtar. Rav Ashi himself for sure would not hold like Shmuel. He definitely was of the opinion that you need a minimum of 3 Dayanim in order to make up a Shtar, in order to make up a Bezdin, and therefore this Shtar is valid, even though it doesn't say that, it doesn't explain why the third Dayan is not signed on the Shtar, but nevertheless there was a third Dayan. And that more or less ends our discussion about Odisha. You know, we had many different elements in our discussion about Odisha. You could write up a whole Siman and Shulchan Aruch about Odisha. If the Lova is Moda, was he Moda just haphazardly in front of the Tovea? He didn't know about the Edom, or even if he knew about the Edom, he never accepted the Edom. He didn't say Atem Edai. Is there a possibility that he was Moda because of a joke? He was Meshata Nibo. Is it possible he was Moda because he wanted to fatten up? He wanted to indicate that he's not a rich guy, he's only a poor guy. And then even after we solve all those problems, then we want to know what if the Tovea says Atem Edai and the Lova is quiet, is he accepting these Edoms? Fine. Then we want to know, do the Edom have a right to write up a Shtar? And we discuss the text of the Shtar, and sometimes the text of the Shtar is incomplete. And then we spoke about the case where the Lova gathered together 3 witnesses, and therefore we assume that he appointed them and authorized them as a Bezdin. But even though Bezdin has the ability to write up the Shtar without the permission of the Lova, and that's called the Shtar Udisa of Bezdin, but nevertheless, the Nusach of the Shtar has to indicate clearly that there were 3 Dayanim signed on the Shtar. And if there are only 2 signatures, then we have to at least have the Nusach that would convince us that they didn't mistakenly think the Halach is like whom? Like Shmuel. Okay, now we have a new Braisa. And this Braisa is also about Hodas Baldin. And it's going to discuss cases, various scenarios, where the Hodas Baldin is not reliable. Tana Rabbanan, a man dies and he leaves Yisomim. So there's an estate, and the orphans will now inherit the estate. Amar lehem echad. Somebody from the street comes along and tells the Yisomim, Ani ra'isi es avichem, I saw your father, shehitmin mos b'shida b'teva u'b'migdal. These are 3 different types of closets or compartments. I saw, okay, this is only half of what he says, but the first half of what he says is, I saw that he hid Mos in a certain place. A shida is a closet on wheels. A teva is a closet that's stationary. Migdal looks like comes to a point up on top. Anyway, these are 3 different words that indicate a certain place where you might have locked up your mos. And I saw your father lock up a certain sum of money in one of these places. But that's only half the story. The second half of the story is, the Amar, and I heard your father when he was hiding these mos, maybe I'm a good guy, I'm a friend of his, and he added 3 words. He says, Shalplonihem, that these mos belong to so-and-so. Now, watch what happens here. We're going to get to Maaseh Sheni in just a minute, but just let's focus on Shalplonihem. We have halacha called Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Haraya. Let's call Ploni, we'll call him Yankala. So this person is testifying that I heard from the father that Ahodah, he admitted that those mos that he's putting away really belong to Yankala. Either it means that Yankala gave me a deposit and I was meant to watch and return it, or Yankala lent me money and I designated this money to return the loan and pay it up. Maybe I was a shomer, whatever it is. These mos, by admission of the father, the deceased, the late father, belong to Yankala. But we have a principle called Amotzi Mechavel Varai, which means when Yankala now comes to Bezdin, what proof does he have that this money, these mos, belong to him? He wants to take them out of the possession of the Yisomim. Well, if that be the case, the burden of proof is on his shoulders. Bring two witnesses that that money is yours. So he invites this one witness in who says that I was there when the father hid this in this place and he made his statement, shall plonium, they belong to Yankel. And that's the only evidence that Yankel could adduce to remove the money from the possession of the Yisomim. And that has the status of Eid Echad. 1/8. Now the Torah in Dini Mamonos, to take money out of a muchzak, out of the hands of he, requires how many Eidim? 2 Eidim. Everybody with me on this? Now here's another case. This is a different case, which is also covered by this price. So what happens if a person testifies in front of the Yisomim that this your father hid these mos in such and such a place, and he announced that these are my Sesheni mos. Now my Sesheni, as you know, is money that has to be brought to Yerushalayim. Usually what happens is you take, let's say, 1/10 of your produce, and you might have to multiply that in the case of Meiser Rishon for Olevi, but we're talking now about Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni is the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle. And on those 4 years, the Meiser has to be separated 1/10 of his produce. Again, which produce and at what stage in the produce, for that you have to learn the laws of Maaser. But the point is that food has to be schlepped all the way to Yerushalayim and eaten by Yerushalayim the Kedusha Vitara. Otherwise, the option is what? Pigeon, he could be poded. So he was poded on these mos, but these mos have kedushas maaser sheni. You don't really own them. That's what he's telling the Arsha. And it's a vast amount of money, and that sum of money has to be taken to Yerushalayim in order to fulfill the mitzvah maaser sheni. Now here, Rabbo, so we have a whole different story. Because what I told you before, that the Torah relies on two witnesses and nothing less will do, that's only in Dini Mamonos. That's based on the principle called Amotzi Mechavero all of Araya, but here we're not talking about a motzi mechavel Araya. We're talking about the kedushas maaser sheni. I mean, if chas v'shalom you would take the most of maaser sheni and use them for your own purposes, you'd be violating an isa doraisa of kedushas maaser sheni. And there we have a principle called eid echad neman. Anybody know what I'm referring to? Bisurin, excellent. Eid echad neman bisurin. That whenever it comes to isa v'heter, if I come home and I want to know if I'm allowed to have a relationship with my wife, she tells me she went to the mikvah, eid echad neman bisurin. If I come home and my wife wants to serve me a piece of meat, then I want to know, you know, who shechted the meat or where did you get it from, is eid echad neman bisurin. All of isurim are based on eid echad. Again, you could ask about Gerushin. Gerushin is interesting because you need two witnesses for Gerushin, but that comes under a different principle called Ein Dover Sheberva Pachos Mishnayim, that Erva is a Gzereshava Dover Dover Mimamon, that just like in Mamon it says Al Pishnayim Eidim, and in the parish of Arayas it also says Dover, Ki Motzeba Ervas Dover, so Dover Dover Mimamon, and you need. The only exception to Eidechad Ebni Surin is going to be a Dover Sheberev. The Dover Sheberev is upgraded to a different status and a requirement of two witnesses like in Dini Mamon. So this guy is telling this the Arshim, we know that these Mos are Mos Meiser Sheni. And how do we know it? Because we heard it from your late father. Comes along the Bryce with a whole rigmarole, a whole story here. Where are the Mos? I wouldn't have asked that question. Who cares where the mos are? Zok de Braisa bebayis, if the mos are in the house, lo amar klum, the testimony of this one aid is meaningless. Now I understand why his testimony is ineffective as far as Didi Mominus is concerned, if he says shall ploni him and Yankel wants to come and claim these mos, because now we have a principle of Motzi Mechavero, all of a Rai, you need a Rai of two Eidim. But I'm not sure I understand why Lo Amar Klum, in the case of Shal Meiser Sheni, that there is no din of Muchzok, and it's a question of Eid Echad Nem Bisurin. So that we're going to have to figure that out as we go through this Sugya. Basadeh, but if on the other hand the mos are hidden out in the field, so that's not exactly your classic case of Shida Tevo Migdal, but maybe you had a Shida that was located out in the field in such a way that the Yisomim did not have a Chazaka. So if they don't have a Chazaka, is Dvarav Kayamin. Now again, you might ask, why don't they have a Chazaka in the Sada? Or alternatively, why don't they have a Chazaka in the closet that's located out in the Sada? So we're going to have to find an answer to that question as well. But the bottom line is, Klol shel davar, kol shebiyado litlam. Which means that if the aid has access to these mos, because there's no chazaka, the somim are not holding on to these mos within the four cubits, or shall we say the four walls of their home, you know, and if somebody comes into their house, they get attacked by a dog or something, right? You know, you can't just enter into someone's house; that would be trespassing. So that's called ein biyadam litlam. But kol shebiyadam litlam, let's say the money is out in the field, is then dvarav kayamin. Now dvarav kayamin here means that we rely on the aid. Why are we relying on the aid? The aid, by his own admission, is testifying about mos that belong to this man's father. If these mos at one point in time admittedly belong to the man's father, I mean to say the Yorshim's father, then that makes the man a muchzak. So I don't need biyado litlam in order to say that we believe these aidim. Let me say it the other way around. Even if it was biyado litlam, I don't understand why do I believe the aid, and that's the case of Sada, based on the fact that the aid has access, because these mos are not within the bias, but it still remains eid echad. You know, no matter how you slice the cake, that's eid echad. They only have one. There's only one witness. There's no other witness. If there's no other witness, then hamotzi mechavel arayel apply. Maybe not midin classic muchzakus, but certainly midin marakama, meaning that we know that at one point in time, the late father owned these mos. Beyond that, we could say that the Shida Tevo Migdal, although it's out in the Sada, belonged to the Yarshim, and therefore that itself gives them a din of muchzakus. So why are we believing this aid simply because of biyado litlam? So Rashi explains that we have a principle called migu, otherwise known as mali l'shaker. If I have access to these mos, and the yesomim know nothing about these mos, they're hidden away, and it's not written in the inventory. It's not on the list of you go to a lawyer, he writes up a will, and the will includes this and that, and it was karka here, metaltalin here, money in the bank, and so on and so on. Well, guess what? These mos, this bag of coins, is not written in the list. So the Arshim have no clue about these mos. This person, if he was a sly, dishonest person, if you pardon the phrase, a swindler, he could have easily have absconded with these mos. He knows where they're hidden. Nobody else knows where they are. Nobody even knows they exist. So mali l'shaker, why would he lie? So we have a strong piece of evidence called mali l'shaker, why would he lie? He's not gaining anything. He doesn't benefit by lying. Normally, when a person tells a fib and he wants to take mos from somebody and give it to somebody else, we think that he's gaining something, but there's no reason to assume that he's gaining anything here. If he was a no good liar, then he would have taken the money for himself. He would have pocketed it. Nobody knows. Nobody would know the difference. And therefore, if it's biyado litlam, he could stealthily just dig it up and take the money. Nobody else knows about it. It's dvarav kayamim. We believe him based on amali l'shaker. And amali l'shaker is a kind of amigu. And this is going to engender a whole discussion about migu lahotzi. Normally, we say migu is good lahachzik mom, but not lahotzi mom. Right? For example, if let's say Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me 1,000. And Shimon says, no, I only owe you 500. So that's called a migu. If he wanted to, he could have said, I don't owe you anything, because Reuven has no evidence to support his claim. So Shimon could have denied the whole claim. Instead, he was a good guy, and he admitted half the claim. That's called a migu. But that migu is lahachzik. That migu is to protect the possessor. Here, the migu is to take money out of the possessor's hands. So that's one issue in the sugi. The other issue in the sugi is what I mentioned earlier, and that has to do with Meiser Sheni. So the Tosus HaRosh asks this question about Meiser Sheni. He says the following, Eizav migu shayach lomar l'gabi mos Meiser Sheni, Ein lomar shal yochel alosin Yerushalayim lochlin shom. You're saying if he wanted to, he could take the mos because he knows where they are and nobody knows where they're stashed away. So what's he going to do with these mos? Ah, if he's lying, he's going to take them to Yerushalayim. Hare lo haya gozel mamon acherim kedei lekayim es divrei ames. Right? He is telling us that the Yerushim have to take this money up to Yerushalayim. That's what he heard from the late father. So what are we saying? That if he was a swindler, he himself would have taken them up to Yerushalayim and ate them there? I mean, it doesn't make sense that to swindle money, he's going to steal Maaser Sheni money and make up this whole story. I'm sorry, that if he was a swindler, he would have taken the most himself in order to what? To fulfill the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni. Fine. Okay, so that's as far as that. V'ein lochu sha'omer kacha of kidei. Oh. Now we have another question. Even if this aid, echad, we called it, right? Even if he has a mali l'shaker. So what are we going to do? We're going to believe him that he heard from the father that these mos belong to so-and-so, and these mos are my sushene. I don't get it. Dilma, perhaps. Yesh lachshosh, we should be suspicious. That kach omar ha'av, but even though the father said it, it was not a hodah. Do you remember? In every case of hodah, we need atem edai, because otherwise a person who admits that he owes money might be saying it because he doesn't want people to think he's rich. So in truth, basically the late father really owned these mos, and even though he said that he owes it to someone else, that was a fabrication. He didn't want people to think he's rich, so he took those mos and he hid them away. He knew where he could get access to it. And he tells this one aide that, you know what? It belongs to so-and-so. So the answer is, and this is a complicated halacha, that neman bi'enav. What does that mean, neman bi'enav? Under certain circumstances, especially before a person leaves this world, if he says something to an eid echad, then what he's doing is he's taking that person into confidence. And he's giving him a certain level of nemanus, which goes beyond the letter of the law, so to speak. So that even though you might have said, well, what he said to this person was a whole fabrication, and he did it for this reason and that reason, but it wasn't serious, and he never meant it. But the very fact that he took this person into confidence, and he says, you know what, I'm hiding these mos, you know, in that spot, you know, 10 feet under the ground, and you should know that these mos belong to so-and-so, or they belong to Maaser Sheni, it means he gave them monies to that person. So the circumstances indicate that this Eid Echad should have a level of them monies that goes beyond, as I said before, what normally would be halachically a requirement of two witnesses.
So Shkiv Merah is like, like, is it Haba? It's the connected to it?
I mean, well, that's going to be the next piece. No, right now we're not introducing Shchimira. We're just introducing the fact, this is the Nebuki Yosef, that he entrusted this person with the, you know, with this revelation that A, the mos are hidden here, and B, that these mos belong to so-and-so. That's the Nebuki Yosef. The Rashba says that a person is not going to fool around when he's a, again, not exactly a shchiv meira, but when he has money and he wants to make sure that money goes before he dies, you know, to the right places. So we're not going to use the svara of adam osi shelo lasbias atzmo under these circumstances. Okay, fine. Let's go on just to get the overview of the sugya. Ein biyado litlo. However, in a case where he doesn't have access, it's out there in the, it's inside the bayis. Lo amar klum. In other words, an eid echad without a migu, without this malu l'shak. Again, if it's outside and he has access to it, then if he was lying, he would just take it himself. But the very fact that that he didn't take it for himself indicates that he has nemonis, he's not fabricating this story. But if it's in the bias, which means that he has no access to these mo's, then he just becomes a regulator. There's no malu l'shaker, and therefore he's not believed to be motzi the moment. Again, we're still stuck with Maiser Sheni. So I want to read to you a note he has in the name of Talmidei HaRamban. L'chora ha'edus l'gabi ma'iser sheni havi edus shal iser v'heter. Sharei ha'ed bo lesar samos sha'asal y'elchlam chutzu yushalayim elo alosam yushalayim b'kedushas ma'iser sheni v'edechen em bisurin. Im kain hayolanu lesar esamos ha'elu al pi eduso shel edechod af al pi she'ein biyado litlam. So just to summarize, the Talmidei Ramban say, why don't you believe Eidechad under the general principle of Eidechad Nem Bisurin? As far as Maaseh Sheni is concerned, there's an Isur of using the Maaseh Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Vitirates. So the Talmidei Ramban gave the following answer. Eidechad Nem Lahatir of a low lesser. And on this, in the back of the Masifta, there are pages and pages. So what is the nemonis of Eid Echad Nem Bisurin? So the two ways of saying it. One way of saying it is that as far as the Isurim is concerned, Eid Echad is the balabas. You know, he can tell me whether it's Asur, whether it's Mutter. In either case, Isur or Heter, we're dealing with Isurim. And that's not dinimominus, and therefore it comes under the jurisdiction of one testimony, one aid. In fact, this halach of Eid Echad is very different than Eidus, because Eid Echad Nem Bisurin means even an Isha, or even Apostle, an Evan. So for many cases where you believe in Eid Echad Nem Bisurin, where you would not even integrate that aid as one of two aid them if there was another aid. He's an aid Apostle. Furthermore, Eid Echad Nem Bisurin doesn't really require Haggad in front of Bezdin. If I tell you that this is also a Mutter outside of Bezdin, that's a full-fledged Nemonis, because it's not Haggad b'fnei Bezdin. Third of all, in Eidim we have a principle called Kevin Shehigit Shuvein Echozer Magid, that if the Eidim come in, and after their testimony they tell Bezdin, no, we made up the whole story, and it was just... They don't have the authority to rescind their Eidus once it was given. Kevan Shehigin, Shuvein Echozer Magid. But in Echad Nem Bisurin, which is outside of Bezdin, so then he can say, well, I only said it for this reason, that reason. He gives you a whole story as to why he said what he said. And if you believe his story, that's called an Amasla, then his Eidus is completely null and void. So for example, the Gemara has in Masechta Nida, a case where a woman came home and she told her husband that night that she was a Nida. And then the next day she says, no, I didn't mean it seriously. I just wasn't in the mood, if you know what I'm saying. I'm even young. So the Gemara says, that's an Amasa which we can accept. And we're not going to force her to go to Mikvah. We're going to say that she's believed to say that she's Tahora, even though she gave a testimony that she was a Nida, but that testimony wasn't binding. And why isn't it binding? Because she undermines that testimony with an Amasla. That's the power of Eid Echad Nem Bisurin. So Eid Echad Nem Bisurin is very radically different than Eidus, in terms of who's believed, how many people you need, in terms of where the statement has to be made, inside Bezdin, outside Bezdin, in terms of Kevan Shehigid, can you give an Amasla? An Amasla and Eidus will not help. It's meaningless. Kevan Shehigid. Now the question is, what did the Torah say? So we gave one answer, one approach, and that's the Torah said that in Isurim and Eid Echad is a balabas. You know, he'll tell you whether it's Osir, whether it's Mutter. The other way is to say the following. The Eid Echad has no right to tell you that which you think is Mutter is Osir. You know, you own something. We have a principle called Ein Adam Osir Davashena Shalom. The Eid Echad is not given the authority to testify about something that has a cheskas heter, that it should be also. If he wants to testify about something that you might think is also, he wants to tell you it's mutter, we can rely on him. He's trustworthy, and he can be matir. But to tell you about something that you have possession over, and that we have every reason to assume is mutter, now he wants to mechadish to you, it's asur, that he has no nemonis. Not everybody accepts this, but I'm just telling you this one such school of thought, and our sugi would seem to support that school of thought. So for example, if you come over with a piece of meat, and you say, I bought it from this shochet, and this shochet is a reliable shochet, now I come to you and I say, no, that meat wasn't shechted properly. I can't prohibit it on you. Eidechenem bisurin doesn't mean that I have carte blanche over Isav Heter to tell you that which you assume, and you have every right to assume is Heter, that you made a mistake in his also. That authority you don't have as an Eidechen. If we go with that approach, then we begin to understand our Brisa, because the Brisa says that when this man says that I heard from your father before he passed away, that he hid the mos, and those were mos, my susheni, and therefore don't you dare use it for your own purposes, you know, you have to take it up to Yerushalayim and there you could use it, then he's creating an Isur based on Eidechen and Bisurin. Oh, no. That much credibility he doesn't have. His credibility is to be matir something that you thought maybe is awesome. So he could tell you about this piece of meat. I know where it came from and it's a reliable source. But to tell you that when you took the meat and bought it from a reliable source that it's asur, that he's not believed. So for you, for an Eidechet to say to you, well, these mos that you think are mutter are maaser sheni, that he's not believed. That's not within the purview of Eidechet Nem Bisur. And again, as I said, that's a major, major issue. Now we have another story. Hare ro'u es haviyem shehit min mos b'shida tevu migdal v'omar shel ploni. Shall ploni hem, shall maiser sheni hem. Let's say, for example, there were two witnesses. You see, it says ro, right? Before, in the first case, it says anira isi. Do you remember that? Here, it says ro. So now, there's no question that this actually took place. They're two reliable edim, and therefore they're telling us the story, and we have to accept that story. But the question is, how to interpret that story? Ro'u es avihem she'it min mos b'shidat tevu migdal. V'omar, and he said, mos, elu these mos, shall ploni and belong to so-and-so, shall maiser hen. Do we therefore accept that testimony as is? It depends. Im kim moser dvarv kayomim v'im kim marim lo omar klum. Now it's true. We have to rely on the Edom. They're not the two Edom. They heard this from the father. These mos belong to sons. But let's look at the Hodah itself. Did the Hodah include Harei Atem Edai? Did the late father appoint these two witnesses as a hodah bifneihem, that I am going to make hodah in front of you two guys, and you're going to testify that these mos belong to Yankala? That didn't happen. And therefore, I can give any number of explanations as to why this late father made that statement in front of two witnesses. And that's called kimarim. So there's something first and foremost called kimoser dvarav. It's as kimoser dvarav means the attitude or the ambiance in which he made this statement in front of the two edim was kimoser. Kimoser means I am giving you two witnesses a monetary statement. I'm making a monetary statement in front of you, and you are commissioned to testify to that effect. That's called kimoser. In that case, dvar of kayomim. But im kimarim, if he said it in a different way, a different kind of an attitude, in other words, he just wanted to make sure that no one would think that these mos are his, right? Because then they'll take away this mos during his lifetime, or perhaps they'll think he's a rich guy, and you know he's gonna have to pay high taxes or whatever have you. Is then we see clearly that he didn't mean it. He wasn't making a legal formal admission in front of this pair of edim. It's lo amar klum. It's not considered valid valid hodah. It's not a real hodah. So again, if it was kimoser, then the yarshim, once they heard from these two edim that the father made this moser and he presented in front of the two edim a legal monetary binding statement about who owns these mos, then they would have to give those mos over to Plony, over to Yankula. But if, on the other hand, it was not a moser, then he's marim. Now, it's very interesting. If I tell you that if X, the din is so-and-so, but if Y, the din is the opposite, is there any middle ground here between this and that? Do you follow what I'm saying? There's a black and white situation here, but in truth, there could be a gray area. There might be something which is not called Kim Moser, but it's not called Kim Marim. Do I need a positive Kim Moser in order for this Elus and this Hodah to be binding? So I need a Kim Moser. Or I just have to make sure it's not a Marim. And if it's not a Marim, if I have no reason to believe that he was Marim, there's no indication to that effect, and it's in that middle ground, it's in that twilight zone, then maybe Dvarv Kayom. I don't need a positive, there's no requirement of Kimoser. So he has a sefer here called Chamri V'Chai. I'm not sure, but I think it was authored by Benvenisti. I mean, he was really one of the Gedolim, but I'm not sure, I have to look that up. And he wants to say, Ba'ofen, She'eno Moser V'eno Marim, if it wasn't a Moser and it wasn't a Marim, Anu Omrim She'kavanosa Laharim, that he doesn't want to be a rich guy, he doesn't want to look like a rich guy. Now, I think, again, I don't have access to the Chamra V'Chai, but I think what he's saying is that based on the earlier sugya about Hodah, that we came to the conclusion that Hodah is not just an admission. It has to be a formal legal admission, and the Lov has to make this admission in front of two Edom, and he has to know that there are two Edom there, and he has to want these Edom to serve as witnesses. There are very formal requirements in Hodah to upgrade the Hodah to a valid and an irretractable Hodah. Therefore, what the Gemara is saying is that the only validity of this testimony of these two witnesses is only if it was Kimoser. Kimoser means he said to the Edom, I am giving you in front of you this absolute legal formal Hodah. Now we get to the third case. So again, the difference between the first two cases is, number one, that in the first case there was only one witness. In the second case, there were two witnesses. And the second difference is that the first cases depend upon this migu of Mali Lashaka. Do we believe that witness? And that depends upon whether the mos were accessible to him, they were out in the Soda, or they were in the Bais. The second case, on the other hand, also will split into two, it depends, but it doesn't depend on Sado Bias, it depends on Kim Moser or Kim Ma'arim. Now we have the third case. In other words, the Yosam, the orphan, Nebuch, knows that there were most that his father left him, but Hoya Mitztair, why would you be Mitztair? Why would you be suffering because of money that your father left you? The answer is because ba balachalom vi amalo kach v'kach b'makom ploni hem shel maser sheni. This is a wild piece of Gemara. The man, or shall I say the orphan, went to sleep one good night, and maybe he had a restless night in bed. Because the Balach Halomos, there's a, up in Shemayim, there's a Sar, there's a special celestial angel who is in charge of Halomos. And there's a whole sugi at the end of Masechta Brachos about how to interpret these dreams, because dreams are to be taken seriously. So the Balach Halomos shows up in his dream, and he tells him, and by the way, there are a lot of stories about this, but it's all based on this Gemara. And kach v'kach hein, I'm going to tell you exactly how many mos your father left B'makom Ploni, that you'll find him exactly at, the Baal Kolomis tells him where to find him. It's pretty impressive, no? He tells him how much money there is to the last dime. He tells him exactly where they're located. And then, unfortunately for the Yosov, he tells him, Shal Meiser Shady him. Up until those words, Shal Meiser Shady him, this was a great dream. You know, I would have woken up from that dream, immediately run to the dig under the bridge, you know, or under the backyard, you know, and find this treasure. That this is really great. And the Baal HaKolomis told him exactly how much it is and where it is. Oh, but Zelaya Maisa, but the Baal HaKolomis told him that it was Maisa Sheni Geld. The Omra and the Chacham said, Divri Chalomos lo mailin v'lo myoridin. The legal status of Chalomos is Zippo. We don't have to worry about Chalomos. Chalomos is not Eidus. And in order to establish an Isra on something that's Becheskes Heta, you need Eidus. At least 8 echa, but we wanted to say you might even need 2 edim, because an 8 echa is only neman lehati, but not lesser. But in any case, there's no testimony at all. There's no objective evidence, except for the fact that he had a dream. But divrei chalomos lo ma'alim v'lo morid. Which really disappoints me, because Asha, I want to tell you, last night I had a dream that you owe me $1 million. So I would have liked to say that Divrei Chalomos Ma'alim, but nein, I can't collect the money. Why? Because Divrei Chalomos Lo Ma'alim V'lo Moridim. And here, Rabosai, we have a gigantic, gigantic discussion. I think I once gave a shiur on this topic. Don't ask me to remember the details. But believe it or not, there are poskim who would say that we do rely under the following circumstances on chalomos. Okay, you ready for this? He says that bala chalom kivein leminyan amos ulemekomon. This sar coming from Shemayim that zapped you with a chalom, told you exactly to the last penny how much money it was, exactly where it's located. Is Yesh Lomashu Neman? He should also be Neman al Maus Hamos. I mean, what's the nature of these Mos? So the answer is that we have another principle. Ein Chalom below Dvar B'Telim. That every Chalom has an admixture of something that's created by what's called a Koach HaDimyon. In other words, during the day, you know, you think about this and you think about that. Hopefully not in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. And you start imagining all sorts of things. Then you go to sleep at night. And, you know, you imagine things. And all this adds to the Baal HaKolomos. So the Sar in heaven can't give you a pure Chalom, because you're adding your own elements to it. So therefore, Anu Omrim, Shemasha Omelo Shal Maiser Sheniheim, Harei Zeh Dvarim B'Teil. That's Dvarim B'Teil. So far, we have Hakofa Aleph. However, so I'm looking for Hakofa Beis here, just 1 second. Just where is this here? Oh, there's Yerushalmi. Just give me a minute here, I'm sorry, I apologize. How are we doing on the clock? Oh, we're not doing too good. All right, so Belinet, I don't want to keep you because it's already too late, but there is a Yerushalmi. Oh, I didn't find the whole thing, but I found at least one line here. And that'll let you go with this. He quotes a Gemara at the end of Brachos, and the Gemara says that a chalom is echad mishishim b'nevuah. It's 1/60th of prophecy. So he says that im yesh raglayim l'dover shachalom hu emes. Okay, I'm not finding it here, but anyway, there's Yerushalmi that indicates that in certain cases we actually believe a chalom, but I don't find it. I know it's here somewhere. Maybe I saw it in the back. So we'll leave that for tomorrow. Okay, then. So let's just make a note of where we got up to here. We are up to the mission of Shnayim Omrim Zakai. Actually, we pretty much finished the whole sugya, minus this story about the dreams that I want to finish tomorrow. Anybody happen to have a... All right, it doesn't matter. We'll. You have a pencil? Oh, thanks. I'll give you right back. So now we have what I call Masechta Brachos Be'iyun. which means we pick something from the daf or one of the dafim.